Section 3, Jackson and the Bank, an American story. President Andrew Jackson made many enemies. His most outspoken rivals, the Whigs, were strong in Congress. They accused King Andrew of increasing his power and spreading corruption with the spoils system. In response, Jackson declared that the president was responsible for the protection of the liberties and rights of the people and the integrity of the Constitution against the Senate or the House of Representatives, or both together. War against the bank. Jackson had another great battle during his presidency. For years, he had attacked the Bank of the United States as being an organization of wealthy Easterners over which ordinary citizens had no control. The Bank of the United States was a powerful institution. It held the federal government's money and controlled much of the country's money supply. Although the bank had been chartered by Congress, it was run by private bankers rather than elected officials. The bank's president, Nicholas Biddle, represented everything Jackson disliked. Jackson prided himself on being a self-made man who started with nothing. Biddle, on the other hand, came from a wealthy family and had a good education and social standing. In 1832, Jackson's opponents gave him the chance to take action against the bank. Senators Henry Clay and Daniel Webster, friends of Biddle, planned to use the bank to defeat Jackson in the 1832 presidential election. They persuaded Biddle to apply early for a new charter, a government permit to operate the bank, even though the bank's current charter did not expire until 1836. Clay and Webster believed the bank had popular support. They thought that an attempt by Jackson to veto its charter would lead to his defeat and allow Henry Clay to be elected president. When the bill to renew the bank's charter came to Jackson for his signature, he was sick in bed. Jackson told his friend Martin Van Buren, "The bank, Mr. Van Buren, is trying to kill me, but I will kill it." Jackson vetoed or rejected the bill. Jackson, like many others, still felt the bank was unconstitutional, despite the Supreme Court's decision to the contrary in McCulloch v. Maryland in 1819. In a message to Congress, Jackson angrily denounced the bank, arguing that when laws make the rich richer and the potent more powerful, the humble members of society, the farmers, mechanics, and laborers, who have neither the time nor the means of securing like favors to themselves, have a right to complain of the injustice of their government. The election of 1832. Webster and Clay were right about one thing. The Bank of the United States did play a large part in the campaign of 1832. Their strategy for gaining support for Clay as president, however, backfired. Most people supported Jackson's veto of the bank charter bill. Jackson was reelected, receiving 55% of the popular vote and collecting 219 electoral votes to Clay's 49. Martin Van Buren was elected vice president. Once reelected, Jackson decided on a plan to kill the bank ahead of the 1836 schedule. He ordered the withdrawal of all government deposits from the bank and placed the funds in smaller state banks. By 1836, Nicholas Biddle was forced to close the bank. Economics. The Panic of 1837. When Jackson decided not to run for a third term in 1836, the Democrats selected Martin Van Buren of New York, Jackson's friend and vice president, as their candidate. Van Buren faced bitter opposition from the Whigs, a new political party that included former National Republicans and other anti-Jackson forces. Jackson's great popularity and his personal support helped Van Buren easily defeat several Whig opponents. Van Buren was inaugurated in 1837. 2 months after Van Buren took office, the country entered a severe economic depression, a period in which business and employment fall to a very low level. The depression began with the Panic of 1837, a time when land values dropped sharply, investments declined suddenly, banks failed, and people lost confidence in the economic system. Within a few weeks, thousands of businesses had closed, and hundreds of thousands of people had lost their jobs. Many Americans could not afford food or rent. In February 1837, people in New York put up signs voicing their anger. Bread, meat, rent, and fuel, their prices must come down. The voice of the people shall be heard and will prevail. President Van Buren believed in the principle of laissez-faire, that government should interfere as little as possible in the nation's economy. Van Buren did persuade Congress to establish an independent federal treasury in 1840. The government would no longer deposit its money with private individual banks, as it had started to do during President Jackson's war with the Bank of the United States. Instead, the government would store its money in the federal treasury. The private banks had used government funds to back their banknotes. The new treasury system would prevent banks from using government funds in this way, and so help guard against further bank crises. Van Buren and his supporters hailed the new law as a second Declaration of Independence. However, criticism of the act came from members of Van Buren's own Democratic Party, as well as from Whigs. The split in the Democratic Party meant the Whigs had a chance to win the presidency in 1840. Reading check. Explaining. What was the new treasury system supposed to prevent? The Whigs come to power. The Democrats had controlled the presidency for 12 years. However, with the country still in the depths of depression, the Whigs thought they had a chance to win the election in 1840. They nominated William Henry Harrison, a hero of the War of 1812, to run against President Van Buren. John Tyler, a planter from Virginia, was Harrison's running mate. Because Harrison had gained national fame defeating Tecumseh's followers in the Battle of Tippecanoe, the Whigs' campaign slogan was Tippecanoe and Tyler, too. To win the election, Harrison had to gain the support of the laborers and farmers who had voted for Jackson. The Whigs adopted a log cabin as their symbol. Political cartoons in newspapers showed Harrison, a wealthy man from Virginia, in front of a log cabin. The Whigs wanted to show that their candidate was a man of the people. The Whigs also ridiculed Van Buren as King Martin, a wealthy snob who had spent the people's money on fancy furniture for the White House. The log cabin campaign seemed to work, and Harrison went on to defeat Van Buren by a wide margin. William Henry Harrison was inaugurated in 1841 as the first Whig president. The Whigs were still celebrating their victory 4 weeks later when Harrison died of pneumonia. John Tyler of Virginia became the first vice president to gain the presidency because the elected president died in office. Although Tyler had been elected vice president as a Whig, he had once been a Democrat. As president, Tyler, a strong supporter of states' rights, vetoed several bills sponsored by Whigs in Congress, including a bill to recharter the Bank of the United States. His lack of party loyalty outraged Whigs. Most of Tyler's cabinet resigned, and Whig leaders in Congress expelled Tyler from the party. It seemed that the Whigs could not agree on their party's goals. Increasingly, Whigs voted according to sectional ties, North, South, and West, not party ties. This division may explain why the Whig candidate, Henry Clay, lost the election of 1844 to Democratic candidate James Polk. After only 4 years, the Whigs were out of power again. Reading check. Describing. How did John Tyler become president?